Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1998. The Fayetteville Murders.
Hello. It's really too bad Bill Clinton put on such a weak performance in his televised apology to the nation a couple of weeks ago. He could have done much better if he hadn't worn himself out trying to appear cooperative while waffling and dodging questions from the grand jury the whole afternoon before his speech. As it was, I believe his poor performance left a lot of his supporters feeling uneasy. He certainly left a lot of people who aren't his supporters feeling a bit uneasy about the country's future. I mean, knowledgeable people in other countries already were pretty cynical about the U.S. government. They understand the extent to which it is under the control of the Jews simply from observing its unquestioning backing of Israeli policy in the Middle East, when that policy is clearly detrimental to American interests. And they certainly haven't failed to notice Washington's obedient support of the Jews' current extortion efforts against Switzerland and other countries from which the Jews are in the process of successfully gouging billions of dollars in World War II reparations. Now the cynicism of foreign observers is turning to contempt. Clinton has become a laughingstock around the world. People are amazed that the United States has a president who says he believes that oral sex doesn't really count and who has so little control over his urges that he lets himself get into such an embarrassing mess. What all of this means is that when Mr. Clinton goes on television, puts on a serious face and tells the world that his government will not tolerate having its embassies blown up, people are less inclined to take him seriously. Actually, it shouldn't matter since it's not Clinton but the FBI and other police and military agencies which are supposed to counter terrorism. But in fact, it does matter. Certainly, if I were a terrorist leader wanting to strike at the United States, I'd be greatly encouraged to see the U.S. government headed by a clown like Clinton. I wouldn't worry half so much about all of America's Tomahawk cruise missiles if I knew that the man in charge of those missiles is a fool and a self-indulgent weakling. I believe that we will see an increase in terrorism against the United States during the next 2 years. And I believe that most reasonable people will agree with me that the weaker image of America caused by Clinton's deplorable behavior will be a contributing factor. It's really amazing, isn't it? We can put people on the moon and send robot explorers to Mars, but our political system is a basket case which seems to permit only moral cripples to rise to positions of leadership. It's the sort of political system you might expect to find in a banana republic, or in Africa, or the Middle East. Because it's not just Bill Clinton. If the system were sound, someone like Bill Clinton could never have gotten near the White House. I mean, look at the situation we have now in which all of the media people seem to be in agreement that Bill Clinton's fate depends not on the specific evidence of criminal behavior Kenneth Starr produces in his report to the Congress, but rather on how the opinion polls go. It's not the law which really counts here, but public opinion. If the man's approval rating drops significantly, then the Congress will fall on him like a pack of wolves. But if his approval rating stays high, then the politicians won't dare to touch him. It reminds me of the Colosseum in ancient Rome, where the fate of a gladiator was determined by whether he got a thumbs up or a thumbs down sign from the emperor, and the emperor made his decision based on the shouts of the mob. It's not just foreign terrorists who've lost their respect for the U.S. government. It's everybody. Is this an organic development, which is to say a natural development, or is it artificial? There are political theorists who believe that a civilization, and that includes its governments, has a life cycle which is analogous to that of a living organism. It goes through a youthful period of vigorous and healthy growth, reaches maturity, and then gradually becomes senile and dies. They would attribute the Clinton phenomenon to the senility of American civilization. Then, on the other hand, there are the conspiracy theorists who attribute the decline of American prestige to deliberate sabotage. I take a middle position, about halfway between the Spenglerians and the conspiracy theorists. That is, there certainly is some truth in the Spenglerian or organic view. This country started off with a much higher quality electorate than it has now. Through the processes of non-selective immigration, dysgenic breeding, and an irresponsible and reckless extension of the franchise to broader and broader classes of the population, an electorate has devolved in the United States, which would make the Roman mob in the Colosseum seem like a gathering of distinguished, upright, and responsible citizens. Democracies tend to become senile faster than other forms of government through the process of extending the vote. This process, like giving candy to a baby, goes in only one direction, and that's down. But I believe that it's been a natural process in the United States, for the most part, based on intrinsic weaknesses in the democratic system rather than on deliberate sabotage. But certainly there has been plenty of sabotage. Look at the crew around Clinton, for example. What a collection of camel faces. You'd think he was in the Knesset instead of the White House. In particular, every time Clinton blows up a pharmaceutical factory in some other country in order to divert the attention of the public from his zipper problems, the advisors and functionaries around him, his Secretary of State and all of her assistant secretaries, his Secretary of Defense, his National Security Advisor, and his Deputy National Security Advisor, his new ambassador to the United Nations, his policy advisors headed by the Israeli agent Emmanuel Rahm, his speechwriters, even his soon-to-be new press secretary. These people could more naturally carry on their deliberations in Yiddish than in English. There's hardly a Gentile among them. Actually, Clinton's former Gentile press secretary, Mike McCurry, will still be around for a few more weeks. But with his Jewish girlfriend, Monica Lewinsky, so much in the news these days, I guess he decided he needed to replace McCurry with a Jewish press secretary to explain the details of the relationship to the media. I mean, the environment around Clinton is so kosher that if someone from Mars landed on the White House lawn, he would conclude that the U.S. population is 90% Jews instead of just over 2%. And really, this all too obvious, this all too visible domination of our government by Jews isn't even necessary from the Jews' point of view. They have a death grip on the country, which they can maintain just as effectively from behind the scenes. They don't need all of those Jews out in plain sight, where someone other than a Martian might notice them and begin thinking. You know, the politicians in Washington express varying views on many different subjects. Some are in favor of unlimited abortion, and some are not. Some are in favor of bigger welfare checks for the drones, and some are not. Some are tree cutters and polluters, while others occasionally will speak in favor of protecting the environment. Some are for so-called gay rights, and some are not. But there is not one of them who will oppose the Jews on anything at all. Not one of them who will say out loud, hey, we have too many Jews in this government. And that's not a natural development. That's the result of a carefully planned and well-organized campaign of subversion. We have a gang of politicians who always dance to the Jews' tune, no matter what tune the Jews choose to play, because the system has been subverted so that only such politicians can succeed in it. The Jews' tools for subversion have been the mass media of news and entertainment. You know, I've talked about the Jewish control of the news media often, but I'm sure that many people still don't believe what I say on that subject. They can't bring themselves to believe that in a country with so many newspapers and news magazines and radio stations and television stations all trying to make money by reporting the news, any small group of people can keep all these media under control. They can't believe that a minority making up only a little over 2% of the population can censor the news tightly enough to control what Joe and Jill Sixpack think. They can't believe that the Jews are able to use the media in such a disciplined way that they can change the outcome of any election. Let me give you a very forceful and a very current example of Jewish media control, which shows just how tight and how vicious it is. On Monday of last week, that was the 17th of August, two young white women were murdered in Fayetteville, North Carolina, near Fort Bragg, the big Army base, which is home to the 82nd Airborne Division. The murdered women were 18-year-old Tracy Lambert and 25-year-old Susan Moore, both of them remarkably pretty blondes. Tracy and Susan were driving home after work late at night. On their way home, they were abducted by a group of seven blacks and mixed-race Hispanics, all members and prospective members of a non-white gang known as the Crips. The prospective members had been assigned the initiation task of murdering two white people, any two white people. If they wanted to be members of the Crips, they had to find and murder two white people as their initiation into the gang. They found Tracy and Susan driving home in Susan's car. They abducted the girls by stopping the car and forcing their way in, what's known these days as a carjacking. They locked the two white girls in the trunk of the car, drove them to a vacant field just outside Fort Bragg, made them kneel on the ground, and then a little after 3 o'clock Monday morning, shot them in the head. The bullets which killed the girls and which were removed from their heads by the medical examiner had been painted with blue fingernail polish. Blue is the Crips' identifying color. The bodies were found by a farmer early in the morning, just 4 hours after they had been murdered. Two of the gang members were arrested the next day in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, driving Susan's car and using Susan's cellular phone. The other five were arrested in the next 2 days. Two of the arrested gang members immediately confessed. All seven were arraigned on Thursday. So what this means is that the news media had the whole story of these sensational, racially motivated gang murders with all of the lurid details by Thursday, August 20th. Stories began appearing in the Fayetteville Observer Times, the local newspaper, and in a few other local papers near Fayetteville on Friday. And the story also was reported on the local television news program. But that's all. The murders were not reported at all outside North Carolina. I've talked with people all around the country and asked them if they've heard anything about the murders, and none have. I'll wager that this broadcast is the first you've heard of these murders. Now, isn't that remarkable? I mean, that is disciplined censorship. No one in the mainstream media has broken ranks, even on such a sensational story. And of course, it's not that they didn't know. The information was available on the internet to anyone who knew how to look for it, from the Fayetteville Observer Times and other Fayetteville sources. But the word went out that these murders were not to be reported outside North Carolina, and by God, they weren't. Do you remember another racial killing which occurred in Fayetteville a little over 2.5 years ago? I'm sure you do. A white soldier from Fort Bragg, James Burmeister, got tanked up on beer one night in December 1995, along with a couple of his buddies from the base. While in a mood of drunken belligerency, Burmeister ran into a convicted black drug dealer and the drug dealer's black girlfriend in Fayetteville, and he shot them to death. He was arrested shortly afterward, and the case immediately, and I mean immediately, became a cause célèbre. It was a headlined story in the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal and Time and Newsweek and every other newspaper and news magazine in the country. It was on all of the national television news programs, all of them. The controlled media spread the story around the world with breathless haste. And they didn't drop it either. They reported on it over and over and over again for months. Every little detail of the case which came out made new headlines all across America. They found what they called racist literature in Burmeister's room, and that was big news too. No organization, no gang, no gang initiation, just racist literature. But that was enough for Janet Reno to come onto television and announce that she was sending in the FBI. And of course, Bill Clinton also was on television talking about the case and holding it up as a terrible example of white racism. And the professional hate merchants like Morris Deese and his Southern Poverty Law Center and the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith and the Simon Wiesenthal Center and all of the other Jewish groups commented on the case endlessly. A race killing. How terrible. That's what we heard over and over and over again for more than a year. The Jewish organizations which are behind Clinton's plan for a non-white America in the coming decades, the Jews who scripted that plan for him, used the Burmeister shooting in Fayetteville as a propaganda club to make white Americans feel sheepish and keep their heads down. See how awful white racism is? They screamed at us. See where it leads? But hey, Tracy Lambert and Susan Moore, forget them. They weren't convicted drug dealers, and they weren't black. They were just two pretty young white women trying to get home from work. And their killers weren't white. So they're not news. Actually, it's more than the fact that the murder of Tracy and Susan don't fit the pattern that the Jews have been promoting with the media for so long, the pattern of white racists and non-white victims. What has caused news of this case to be stifled is that it fits so perfectly the opposite pattern, non-white murderers deliberately hunting down and killing white victims. Janet Reno won't be sending the FBI to Fayetteville for this hate crime. Bill Clinton won't be on television about it either. And except for those Americans listening to this broadcast, people outside North Carolina won't even hear about it. And this is not an oversight. This is deliberate. This is planned. The last thing in the world the Jewish media bosses want is for white Americans to hear about these murders, because it'll dawn on some of those white Americans that this is the sort of thing they can look forward to when America has a non-white majority a few decades hence. The Crips, after all, are spread all across the country, the biggest criminal gang in America. They are a lethal threat to unsuspecting white people everywhere. They will be an even bigger threat in the future. But that's all right. The Democrats need their votes. You know, even in Fayetteville, where the media could hardly have kept quiet about these murders, there has been no mention at all of the Burmeister shooting in connection with them. No drawing of parallels. That's such an obvious thing, contrasting these racial murders with Burmeister's shooting of the black drug dealer and his girlfriend in 1995 in the same place. But it's clear that even the Fayetteville media are deliberately steering clear of making that connection. Deliberately. They don't want anybody thinking of these murders in racial terms. The image they have established in the minds of the lemmings is one of white racists, white haters attacking poor, defenseless, non-white victims, and they don't want reality to intrude on that image. Now, I don't want to overwork the story of these August 17th Fayetteville murders, but I think that you will agree with me that it's not an ordinary news story. It's not the sort of story that the media bosses decided wouldn't be interesting to the American people. It's not just another one of those ho-hum stories about black criminality of the sort we have every day. It's an extraordinarily important story, a significant story, a story which provides the opportunity for all sorts of commentary and drawing all sorts of parallels, the sort of story which makes people think. That's clear. The media bosses understood that instantly. And with a nationwide criminal gang like the Crips behind these race murders in Fayetteville, it's the sort of story that the media have a responsibility to get to the people in order to warn them of a very real and growing danger. And that's why the media bosses deliberately suppressed the story. They don't want to mess up the false image of white racists and black victims they have worked so long and hard to plant in the heads of the lemmings, of the couch potatoes, of the Joe and Jill six-packs who vote in elections. They don't want the voters to think. They don't want them to know what's really happening in America. They don't want them to form their own opinions about things. The Jewish media bosses want to continue controlling public opinion and controlling the outcome of elections. They do that by suppressing stories like the one I've just told you about the Fayetteville murders. So you see, a big part of America's decline is the consequence of deliberate Jewish subversion, deliberate Jewish sabotage. Through their media control, the Jews do change the way Americans see the world. The Jews do change public opinion. The Jews do use their media control effectively enough to determine the outcome of elections. If they can hammer the story of James Burmeister's drunken shooting of a couple of black lowlifes into the consciousness of every American, and then successfully suppress the story of the cold-blooded murder, the initiation murder of Tracy and Susan by a black gang, they can change the way Americans respond to the Jews' racial programs. They can persuade the lemmings to go along willingly with their plan for a non-white America, an America which they can control and exploit even more easily. Anyway, the total suppression of the news of the murder of Tracy and Susan is an exceptionally convincing illustration of the power wielded by the Jewish media bosses and of the destructive way in which they use that power. And it should help us to understand not only why we have a clown at the head of our government, a clown completely surrounded by Jews, but also why we must have a full-scale revolution in America to clean things up. Thanks for being with me again today.